Show Tangents, the lightly competitive science knowledge showcase. I'm your host, Hank Green.
How did you guys convince him to do this when I can't get him to do Dear Hank and John?
Well, I felt bad that day and I felt better today.
What if you do like the first 20 minutes and then you let Sam
I just leave and I'm like, bye.
Yeah, I think I might be good.
What about if John took over, huh?
Okay, John's just going to sit in the room with me, which will be very awkward for me.
I think he's going to have to listen to your poem too, so
you
know.
He is, okay. And joining me this week, as always, is science expert Sari Riley.
Hello.
And our resident everyman, Sam Schultz.
I'm worried about how to cut whatever just happened, but okay, hi.
You'll figure it out.
Yeah. Okay.
Since none of us have our siblings actually in the room with us right now at all, right. Let's talk about our siblings. What do we got and how do we feel about them? I have an older brother. He's 3 years older, and he is a bit of a pain in my neck sometimes.
Aww.
Oh my God.
Are you actively asking me to justify my when I am the opposite of a pain in the neck?
You can just sigh heavily over there. That's all you're allowed to do. How do you feel about your sister, Sari?
She is 3 years younger than me. And I think we are also very different, but I don't have a longstanding creative collaboration with her. And I think as many siblings do. We actually got along really, really well growing up. And then we stopped talking once I was in high school and moved away. And only recently we've started trying to do phone calls again. So
that's
it's
nice.
Possible after a decade it to is. Like.
And you can also always start a video blog project with them. And that will really, really bring you together.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Maybe then she'd be closer by, maybe even in the same room with me.
If you had a video blog project with your sibling, what would it be about?
Oh, it would probably be, she's really into video games. Like she wants to be a programmer and has been like working towards that. And so the only videos we have creatively collaborated on are Super Smash Brothers based, in which I was just like the second person as she demonstrated various techniques.
That is big sibling behavior. You were getting big siblinged in that moment by her.
I probably deserved it after being a big sibling for my entire life and a little bit bossy.
Sam, if you had a sibling podcast or video blog, what would it be about?
I have tried to get him to stream with me so many times in my life. So that's what we would do. We would stream because he's fun. He's a fun little guy and we play Fortnite together all the time. But that Wilbur's a hell of a guy. He's my best bud.
His name's Wilbur?
Yeah, his name's Wilbur also.
That's a great
Isn't that
name.
Great?
I'm the only little brother in the room. You guys are big siblings and I'm a little sibling, but I feel like I'm the one that's in charge all the time. Maybe I'm overcompensating for something.
Are you ever in charge of your big sibling?
All the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. though recently he has become in charge of me. If you're not aware of what's going on, I'm going through treatment for Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is the best kind of lymphoma to get. And it's going well, and I'm feeling well right now. It's been like 10 days since my last treatment, or my first treatment. And so I'm pretty well recovered from the chemo. And so I wanted to make a podcast, and my friends got together to do that with me. So thank you for that. Every week here at Tangents, we get together to try to one-up, amaze, and delight each other with science facts while also trying to stay on topic. Our panelists are playing for glory and for Hank Bucks, which I will be awarding to them as we play. And at the end of the episode, one of them will be crowned the winner. But first, we must introduce this week's topic with the traditional science poem. This week, because of the scheduling piece of confusion, will be delivered first by Sari and then a second one by me.
The record books are littered with distance over time. The fastest car, the fastest bird, the fastest rock wall climb. And we need the speed of light to understand the universe. But I fear that move fast, break things can sometimes bring out our worst. Sure, we also have a record speed for the slowest of the slow. Sloth go about their day without thinking of that, though. You need not be the mostest when going for a run. To stretch your legs and stretch yourself and just enjoy the sun. So speed can stay, don't go and throw all physics in the trash. It's useful as a quantity, not an excuse to act all rash. The ever-ticking clock leads us to measure thought or art, but to take the steps to know and grow, you don't need a breakneck start.
Lovely.
Bit preachy, I was so... wasn't it?
Okay.
Tell me how to live my life.
I was super confident that we were going to go in different directions on this, and I was correct. Here's our second science poem for the day. I'd like to introduce you to the story of Howard Payne, a man who didn't want to bomb a car or plane or train. No, he wanted to bomb a bus, which is very good news for us, because the story became a classic of our day. But he was far too diabolical to just let the bus explode. No, he had a grander plan for his cinematic episode. Once the bus hit 50, things got risky swiftly, because the bomb was armed and it would blow as soon as the bus slowed. He didn't count, however, on two people we'd all need, a dramatic couple thrown together, and now they must succeed. Sandra and Keanu Reeves, I need to see them, please. Delight my senses on the screen in the hit movie Speed.
I hate you.
That did
the topic
come up.
For the day is Speed. Sari, what's Speed? It's pretty, we've hit one that's easy to define. There's going to be very little to say here, which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. And you gave me knowledge too. This is a little trade-off. I now know the plot summary of the movie Speed.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
Did you know it existed before this exact moment?
Yes, but only because I Googled what is speed to do the definition, and then Keanu Reeves' face came up, and I was like, that must be a movie that's not The Fast and Furious, but also has to do with fastness.
Great film.
But speed, the physics concept, is the rate at which an object, anything's position changes. It's distance divided by time is the equation to calculate it.
And that's super easy, as long as you don't have to define distance or time, which we're not going to do.
Yeah, you just, a distance is like, you walk a certain amount, time, you know time.
How long it takes
you know time.
It marches on. The SI units are meters per second. And so that's the easiest way you can define distance over time. You know, throw a ball a certain number of meters, it flies for a certain number of seconds, and then you can calculate its speed. That's a textbook problem right there. And you don't have to care about direction. Like, speed is one of the simpler physics quantities, where velocity, you need to know what direction something's going. Speed, don't have to worry. Just needs to be moving. And that's it.
And speed can be slow too, can't it?
Yeah, speed can be extremely slow. Even the slowest things have speed.
Yep, even the small wiggles, because nothing is absolute zero. And so
that's right.
Absolute zero would be zero speed, but the wiggles around us have a tiny, tiny bit of speed.
Do we know where this word comes from?
Yes. This is actually surprisingly interesting. So speed, for most of its existence in the English language, meant not the fastness of something. It meant a lot of other things, though. It meant things like power or might. It meant things like abundance. So the speed of something is the abundance of something. And most significantly, it meant like success or prosperity or help or good fortune, things like that. The phrase Godspeed came from that definition of speed of prosperity, like Godspeed to you. So I hope God gives prosperity to you. And then,
what the heck?
At some point in the 1300s, scientists started getting more sciencey, and we were like, I guess we need something for when things go fast. And they just claimed speed for that word. And starting in around the 1300s, that started meaning the rate of motion or progress. And I think that has eclipsed these other meanings of speed. But for a very long time, it didn't mean that. It just meant like, good on you. Good job.
I love it when there are those weird things that hang about forever, like Godspeed, where you're like, that doesn't make any sense. And it turns out that it made perfect sense. Like, I like by Jove. No one knows what Jove is.
Oh.
But it's Jupiter.
Also God?
It's the god
Another
Jupiter.
God.
Jove. And so it's by God, but that other god. So we have all these words that we say, but we don't know what they mean, but they're because they like hung out as part of a phrase that we still use.
But I used to think Godspeed, and I've used it as like, hope you go fast.
Yeah, that fool can probably really move.
Yeah,
it, you know?
Go to your next destination, Godspeed. But really, it means speed. Like.
Yeah.
He says little wing shoes and Godspeed to you, but it really means like good luck.
Well, I feel like I know a bunch of things now, more than I did before, and that means that it's time to move on to the quiz portion of our show. This week we're going to be playing This or That Speed Edition, because when you think of speed, you probably think of races, car races, running races, swimming races, anything that can be put into a lane or a starting block of some kind, and then you get put to the test. But the world is full of things that can't be physically pit against each other in a race for our viewing pleasure. So to fill that void in the market, we have science trivia games. More specifically, it's This or That. I'm going to describe two things that exist in the universe, and it's going to be up to you to decide which of those things is faster. That's easy to know how this works.
Yeah.
Which of these is faster? So first, thanks to our many creative approaches to transportation, humans can travel very fast. But which of the following is faster? The fastest recorded submarine speed or a car driving at the maximum speed in Montana?
Montana specifically?
Yeah, specifically Montana's maximum speed limit.
90 miles per hour?
No, we're 85? Not completely out of our minds.
used to be infinite, but that changed. The federal government made us change it.
Reasonable and prudent is what the sign said.
Yeah.
It was great. Yeah. I never got to experience or enjoy that, but my dad did. I think we should put some real money on this area, what do you think?
What do you mean?
like betting on real races, you know? $100.
$100? I was going to say $1.
Sam seems confident. I would not bet with him right now. Does Sam have like a bunch of weird submarine knowledge we don't know about?
No. I bet submarines are
slow. I do like the idea, though, of giving you guys money every episode.
But not real money. Would you give us real money?
I'll just like bust open my wallet and I'll Venmo you at the end of every episode.
Me and Sari would be at each other's throats. We wouldn't be friends anymore. Just last episode, Hank, you missed it. I told Sari officially she was my friend. Now you're trying to tear us apart.
Yeah, that's officially friend and family.
And family as well.
Oh, wow. Sam had just watched Fast and the Furious and was feeling extremely sentimental.
So it was a big episode.
I'll take it, though.
Family! Okay.
I think submarines are slow as hell, so I bet cars faster.
I think cars faster, too. I bet, yeah. I think
it's so gooey down in the ocean, you know?
It's wet. True.
They just got to bloop around.
Cars are so dry. That's speed.
That's speed, baby.
You are both correct because those submarines are faster than I would have expected it at a top speed of 51 miles per hour. Designing fast submarines is hard because you got to balance speed with keeping them quiet so you can sneak up on enemies. In 1959, the Soviets decided to see if they could strike that balance with a project design, a high-speed submarine that could sneak up and shoot missiles at American carriers and then speed away. And they used a titanium alloy instead of steel to keep the weight lower. And the submarine was powered by two water reactors that helped move it really quickly. And the final submarine was around 107 meters long, and it held 82 officers and seamen. And during a test run in the 60s, they were able to go 51 miles per hour at 100 meters under the surface, which remains the underwater speed record for submarines that we know of. Because there's a, you know, maybe top secret things always happening. The Los Angeles class attack submarines today have an official top speed of 23 miles per hour.
Pathetic.
So there's animals that are faster than that.
Is being secret definitionally part of a submarine, or is it just that no one will fund a non-secret submarine? Because I feel like you could try to go faster if you really wanted to, but someone's made the rule that you've got to be quiet and secret.
Right, right. Well, it's not the rule. It's like what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, that's your goal. Otherwise, you just put it above the water and it'll go way faster because you...
Or a plane.
You might as well have a boat. If you don't want to hide, just be a boat. And it turns out that at its maximum speed, it was extremely loud and it made it unusable as a attack submarine. So that's why that isn't a thing anymore. Round number two, though... Well, let's see if we can get some differentiation here. An egg of the African clawed toad will end up facing the same dilemma that many other eggs do. Will it get fertilized and divide, or will it remain unfertilized and die? Scientists have measured the speed at which the signals driving either fate travel in the frog's egg. So which is faster, the signal for mitosis or the signal for cell death?
That's not where I thought the question was going. I thought it was like the egg is going to fall off a cliff or something.
No, yeah, it's literally the speed of signals within the cell.
Yeah. Huh. Egg's got to be one of the least fast things on Earth.
Yeah, but inside it could be quite quick, maybe.
Death has got to be faster, right? You get the cell death signal, and then mitosis is like, wait. I actually want to fix things. Like, that feels easier, maybe? I don't know. They're both. This is a toss-up. I can't apply any of my biology knowledge for shame when I get it wrong, but I'm going to say death.
And I don't have any biology knowledge, so I'm just going to say the opposite of what Sari said. Which is life.
The answer was mitosis. So mitosis travels at 60 micrometers per minute and apoptosis 30 micrometers per minute. So mitosis is twice as fast. The egg cells are around 1.2 millimeters in diameter. Just for clarity, this is the faster version of this is 0.00013 miles per hour. So it's not super fast, but doesn't have to go very far. So this is pretty big. 1.2 millimeters, pretty big for a cell, of course. And because of that size, scientists have wondered how all or nothing decisions like mitosis or apoptosis get signaled and synchronized throughout the whole cell. Theoretically, you could have a signal molecule or an enzyme diffused through the cell. And for a small cell, that's not a problem. But for a big old egg ready to go through mitosis, that enzyme would need to, it would need 2 hours to diffuse throughout the cell, which is slower than the speed at which mitosis happens. And what scientists have found is that in the egg, processes like mitosis and cell death involve various feedback loops that create trigger waves that allow the signal to travel over large distances at a constant speed. And those waves exist in a lot of different contexts, including action potentials or the way that fire spreads through a field. So just like is also an example of a trigger wave. And so they were actually able to measure this in one of these frog eggs undergoing mitosis in 2013, which is remarkable that you can figure that out.
Yeah. What did they do? Stick some kind of metal thing into it, I bet.
A speedometer, obviously.
Yeah. They shot it with one of them radar guns.
Beep, beep. Yeah.
All right. Our last question here, what is faster? So to report a speed, it helps to know the frame of reference, especially when we're talking about things in space. So I'll give you a frame of reference for this one because it's going to be space. Which of the following is faster? The speed of our galaxy relative to the cosmic microwave background, or the speed of a recently discovered runaway supermassive black hole relative to the home galaxy it was ejected from?
I have no context for things in space.
Correct. Yeah.
And I feel like, so the way I'm going to play this one is by metagaming it. It feels like supermassive black hole being ejected from a galaxy seems so fast. And it seems like, oh, just the Milky Way. Wow, we live here. I don't experience us hurtling through space.
I mean, we've had the entire Big Bang and all of galactic history or universe history to expand away from, but you're right. They're both very fast.
I think it's the Milky Way, because I like the idea that we are unknowingly, well, we already are kind of unknowingly, besides seasons and whatnot, hurtling through space. So why not super, super fast?
Yeah, I have no freaking idea, but it does seem like a trick question to me. So I'm going to say the Milky Way also.
You're both wrong.
It is
very fast. The Milky Way relative to the CMB is 1.3 million miles per hour, which is no joke. Whereas that supermassive black hole is going 3.5 million miles per hour relative to its home galaxy.
Oh
so
my God.
It takes a lot of energy to get a black hole going at all. But getting it going 3.5 million miles per hour does not seem doable, and yet here we are. In April, a team of researchers who had been using the Hubble telescope to study a dwarf galaxy 7.5 billion light years from us reported that they'd found a supermassive black hole roaming interstellar space after getting ejected from its home galaxy. And it's around 20 million times the mass of the sun, this black hole. It appears to be traveling away from its galaxy 3.5 million miles per hour, which is fast enough to go from the Earth to the moon in 14 minutes. Scientists were able to calculate the speed of our galaxy relative to the cosmic microwave background because of a weird quirk in the CMB. It's the microwave radiation left over from the Big Bang, and it permeates the whole universe, and it has a very uniform temperature of 2.725 kelvins, except for a slightly cooler temperature around the Aquarius constellation and a slightly warmer temperature around the Leo constellation. And scientists realized that those temperature dipoles are the result of our movement relative to the CMB, and we can use them to calculate how fast our local group of galaxies is moving relative to the CMB. Based on those calculations, about 1.3 million miles per hour. Wild, weird, I don't know, we figure out so much stuff just by looking up.
Where's that black hole going to?
Just around. Just the next spot, you know.
How long can you go 5 million miles a second or whatever? Forever?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
As far as we can tell, everything's just going to kind of keep going roughly in the same direction. It's going forever.
Huh. Well, that's weird.
That's the most normal reaction to space.
I don't know.
Just like a...
Where is it all... No, that's, I don't know.
Man. Well, Sam, you came out of that with 2 points, Sari with one. Next, we're going to take a short break. Then we'll be back for the Fact Off. Welcome back, everybody. It's time for the Fact Off. Our panelists have brought science facts to present to me in an attempt to blow my mind. And after they have presented their facts, I will judge them and award Hank Bucks any way I see fit. But to decide who goes first, I have a trivia question. On January 28, 1896, Walter Arnold of East Peckham, Kent, was given the first known speeding ticket ever issued for an automobile driver in the world. Oh. How fast was Arnold driving?
Arnold, you bad boy.
Bad boy.
Gosh, 1896. They could probably go like 12 miles an hour, maybe. I bet he was going 13 miles an hour. Crazy. No, he's probably going 22. I'm going to say 22. I'm
trying to think. How fast is a horse?
It's not just how fast is a horse, but like how fast should a horse be going in Kent?
In Kent. And then he was like, I got my little automobile. I'm going to guess like 10 miles an hour. I feel like he was very slow.
Well, Sari, that is very close. He was going 8 miles per hour. The speed limit was 2.
2?
The least bad boy speed out there.
Yeah. What the heck?
So he was supposed to be going 2 miles per hour, which that is below walking speed.
Yeah. Why would you even have a car at that point?
To carry all the stuff.
I guess so. That's true.
You gotta carry all that stuff. Supposedly, in the story, as it goes, the local constable had to bike 5 miles before eventually catching Arnold. It was also the first high-speed chase.
What? You bike so much faster than 8 miles an hour, don't you?
Right? Maybe it was really muddy. I don't know.
A really bad bike?
Yeah, really bad road. They should have had someone run. The local constable should have just hoofed it. An 8 mile an hour car chase for 5 miles. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah, people can run 8 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Not me, though. So that means Sari gets to go first.
In July 2012, experimental and theoretical physicists alike celebrated because evidence of the Higgs boson, casually known as the God particle from a 1993 pop science book, was announced to the world. And we learned about it by smashing other particles together at really high speeds in the Large Hadron Collider. But before the LHC was in operation, and even before the book that gave the Higgs boson its nickname came out, there was a different super-fast particle detected on Earth that captured everyone's attention, or at least scientists' attention. On October 15th, 1991, the Oh My God particle flew through our atmosphere. This particle is considered an ultra-high energy cosmic ray, which is anything above 1 exa electron volt,
or EEV, which in turn is around a billion times the average energy level of most cosmic rays. And it was detected by the Fly's Eye Cosmic Ray Detector, which was operated by the University of Utah from 1981 to 1993. By analyzing the faint glow from the particles' interaction with air molecules in the atmosphere as captured by the detector, physicists calculated that the Oh My God particle had an energy of 320 exa electron volts. That's faster than anything the LHC can accelerate nowadays, and is closer to the speed of light in a vacuum than we had ever seen before, and as far as I can tell, have ever seen since. To put this in perspective, even though the Oh My God particle was subatomic and thought to be like an atomic nucleus or proton, but we couldn't tell exactly, it packed the same kinetic energy of something macroscopic, like an over 50 mile per hour baseball throw.
Huh?
What?
Yeah, so like absolutely wild amount of speed and energy in this very, very
But I hope for, what if one hit me?
I think it'd be an ouchie. I think it'd be a big ouchie.
And it flew through the atmosphere?
Yeah, right above Utah.
It was a proton and it hit as hard as a baseball.
Yeah.
Same. I'm having a hard time with this.
It is.
Could this happen to me at any moment?
It's very, very rare. So from my understanding, this is so rare and had never occurred before that these scientists did the calculations again and again for like a year to make sure that what they detected was real, because it was outside of the realm of cosmic rays we ever expected to detect. Specifically, the Oh My God particles' energy levels smashed through a theoretical cosmic ray speed limit called the GZK cutoff, named after the three physicists who calculated this speed limit, which said that any particle in space with more than 60 exa electron volts would slow down because of interactions with space radiation. And this, again, was 320. And since then, though, we've built fancier particle detectors and noticed hundreds of ultra-high energy cosmic rays above the GZK cutoff, though only a handful of events, like 10 to 15, that even approach the fluke speed and energy of the Oh My God particle.
If it hit you, would you explode or would you just go, hoo! Like if it hit you right in the gut?
I don't know. Like it has a lot of kinetic energy, but I don't know like what happens when it interacts with another thing, because we usually see it fly through the atmosphere. I don't know if it like disperses that energy somehow, that kinetic energy.
I think that there must be like, it must be that because it's so small, it would have few interactions with the molecules,
mm-hmm.
or like with the actual atoms. Like it'd have to actually hit a nucleus. It probably would just fly through you. And if it hit an atom, it would probably ionize it really significantly. Like it'd probably destroy the molecule, definitely destroy the molecule. But I don't know that it would like hit with a physical force because it's a subatomic particle. Could it wouldn't be able to impart its energy in all of its energy into you.
It's not a baseball. Yeah.
It's not a baseball.
Yeah. Flying from space. You are going through, I think, the same things that these scientists went through, which is like, what the heck is this? But the fact that they exist also means that they had to come from somewhere, which is an even bigger mystery. Because high-speed cosmic rays, or cosmic rays in general, usually come from events like supernovae, which are explosive and act like natural particle accelerators. And to achieve these speeds in Earth's atmosphere, the origin of these particles must be relatively close by. And as of a 2017 study, we know they're not from within the Milky Way galaxy, but that's about all we've narrowed down. So where they come from theoretically should be something flashy and high energy and obvious, and like, it is obviously this very energetic thing nearby us.
But we know the direction it came from, right?
But stuff's moved. So if you don't know when it happened.
Shoot, I forgot stuff moved. Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah, speed.
That's
supermassive black holes are flying even faster these particles through space. So
I think this one's got to be an alien just floating around, and he's like, pew, pew, pew. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a.
But yeah, we don't know where to look because space is too freaking big. And so the Oh My God particle remains a mystery. And I can't believe I hadn't heard of it before researching this episode, because
have we found other ones in anywhere else?
Yeah, they just don't have a name like this, because this is the first and highest energy. But the next highest energy is in like the 200 something exa electron volts range. Like people are now specifically looking for these ultra high energy particles because they are so weird. Like, we've detected a handful of them. I forget what the statistic was. I did not write it down. It was like something per square kilometer per century is like the rate of it. So like very, very infrequently, like things will happen.
Frequent
in
enough,
an area.
Though.
Yeah.
That like maybe we will someday be able to use them to find out something interesting about something.
Yeah.
John is back in my room. Hello.
Hi. How's it going?
Good.
How's tangents?
Good. I just found out about a high energy particle traveling so fast that if it were to be able to impart its energy to you, it would be like getting hit by a baseball going 50 miles per hour. And it's the size of a atomic nucleus.
I think I could take that.
Yeah, I bet you could.
Yeah, I could. Yeah. I bet he could,
as long
too.
As it was on the arm.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stay here for the next 10 minutes.
Don't do that.
Oh, I'm so scared.
That's going to make it. That's definitely going to make it take more time.
Thanks, Tangents fans. Wait, you're not cutting me out, are you?
I don't think I can. I don't think it's possible to cut you out at this point.
Yeah. Cutting some of you out.
Yeah.
You're not going to.
I thought this was my Tangents debut. I was very excited.
It is.
We haven't even seen your face. I'm very excited about the concept.
In yeah.
Close the door all the way, though. You left the door open. He just left the door open. Okay. Well, I guess that's how it's going to be. All right. Well, Sari, that is a mind-blowing fact. Sam, what do you have for us?
I don't want to do mine anymore. Needlefish are a family of very long, pointy-faced fish ranging in size from 1 inch to 3 feet that live pretty much all over the world in shallow and surface waters. Their relative longness is, in fact, so pronounced that they're commonly called long toms. Needlefish travel around shallow waters in schools, hunting for schools of smaller fish, which they can catch with 1.5-foot lunges, which is all very normal fish behavior. But in 2015, biologists off the coast of Australia's Heron Island observed needlefish hunting prey and doing something very abnormal as far as fish behavior goes. About half of the attacks on the prey fish were done by leaping out of the water, traveling almost 6 feet, and then plunging back in to catch the prey from above.
Whoa!
Like they could see it 6 feet away and they jump out of the water and land 6 feet away?
I don't think anybody's really figured out how they're doing the math on that one, but they are catching them. So needlefish jumping isn't weird at all because they're part of the same order of fish that includes flying fish, which are famous for their ability to jump out of the water and glide almost 200 feet through the air. And in fact, it seems like all the fish from this order like jumping a lot. They do it to escape predators, or maybe to travel, or maybe even just for fun. I don't know. But none of the rest of them do it for hunting. In fact, these jump hunting needlefish are the first fish of any kind ever observed jumping out of the water to attack prey that is also under the water. So some jump out and like get birds, but no other fish jump to get other fish. So the reason they do this isn't really as exciting as the fact that they do it.
I need to interject here.
Okay.
And I need to tell you that these fish are not small. I thought that they would be small.
Some are.
They're called needlefish.
Yeah.
There are some that are very big.
There are
like
some that are
over
like
a meter long.
Yeah. And they have really funny pointy mouths that look very happy.
Bad would be bad to get hit by.
Just wait till the end of my fact.
Okay. Oh no.
So the reason they do this isn't exciting as the fact that they do it in the first place, but it's thought that the leap gives them the element of surprise, and also most of their prey jump out of the water to avoid getting lunged at. So coming in from above, you can't jump out of the water away from that. But maybe the deadly nature of the needlefish jump isn't so surprising if you already knew something about them. These guys aren't just doing your classic lazy fishy flop out of the water to catch a bug or whatever. These fools are going really fast when they break the surface of the water, like 40 miles per hour. And because some of these guys can get up to 3 feet long, these jumps aren't just dangerous to fish. Over the years, there have been several instances of severe human injury and even death caused by schools of needlefish swimming past swimmers and people in small boats, including people being stabbed in the heart, through the eye and into the brain, in the spine, and in the neck. And there's lots of gross pictures, so don't Google it unless you want to see gross pictures. All the places, basically, you don't want to be stabbed by a fish. And then some.
I don't have any places I want to be stabbed by a fish.
Well, you know what? It's going to happen sometimes. And light seems to get these guys jumping even more. So night swimming or fishing with some kind of light can put you at even more risk. So I guess next time you're swimming or fishing, like anywhere in the whole ocean, keep an eye out for these speedy jumping fellows with a unique hunting style. But maybe don't keep too close an eye out, or maybe one might jump right in your eye.
And I've just found out that sometimes they do this in whole schools because I'm watching a video of it happening where a bunch will jump all at once and you'll be in a kayak like this man in this video I'm watching and just getting very lucky and is what's happening to him.
Yep. Yeah. Right past you.
Yeah. Jeez. 40 miles per hour, 3 feet long. It's like getting hit by a baseball traveling at 50 miles an hour made of knives.
Yeah. Knives and fish meat.
Yeah. Nature's lawn darts or jarts.
What do they eat?
Other fish.
Not people. They're not like, oh, I got one.
No, I think when they get into a person, maybe their lives into there is my guess. I don't think a lot of people are pulling it out and throwing it back in and being like, okay, see you later, bud.
You'll get it next time, man. Little guy.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, that is a very good fact. I like both of those very much. And like they both make great TikToks. But I have to, just like Sari said, I kind of can't believe I didn't already know what the fastest ever thing was.
Yeah.
And now I do. If you only count things that have mass, and that seems very important for a science guy to know, and the fact that we have no idea where they come from, Sarah's gonna pull away with that one.
That's fine.
But she did come into it losing.
Yeah.
So it's a tie. Y'all tied.
Oh,
thank you.
Because Sam's fact was so good.
It was good fact.
Wow. What a nice ending for us.
What a nice ending for us. Except it's not the ending. It's time to ask the Science Couch, where we got a listener question for our couch of finely honed scientific minds.
All right. At Scrandle Randall asks, what's the fastest a human can go before the body can't handle it? Scrandle Randall looked no good.
Scrandle Randall is a very fast kind of name.
He's building a rocket in his garage, and he's getting a little concerned about how good a rocket he's building.
I mean, my body can't. The thing is, bodies can go any speed and be fine, because speed is relative, and we are all going very fast right now. Mm-hmm. What the hard part is accelerating to the speed, and that is even goes for me trying to run and like pulling my quad. I could be going just fine as long as I'm already going, but the part that I'm going to hurt myself doing is the speeding up. Not the being fast, but the big concern is acceleration, which there is an acceleration that no human can handle above 10 G's is definitely starts to be where you can't do it.
But if you just spawned into existence going incredibly fast, you'd just
that's what happened to you. You spawned into existence going incredibly fast.
Okay,
we 1.3
million miles per hour.
Yeah, the Milky Way is going.
I guess I am on that, huh?
There you are. But yes, it is, acceleration is the problem, and we talk about acceleration in terms of g, like that's the easy one g is the acceleration of Earth's gravity, which is 9.8 meters per second squared. So like drop an apple on Earth, falls at 1g, we're all experiencing 1g in general.
The weird part is that currently you are accelerating downward all of the time, which does not seem correct, but is correct. And that is, you are currently feeling that acceleration.
The danger when you change the amount of acceleration that we experience, particularly increasing the amount of acceleration, one is that we are squishy. We have a lot of water and we have a lot of soft organs, and dealing with aggressive acceleration in along axes we're not used to can result in like shifting of organs or things bursting in weird ways. And when it comes to vertical G-forces, then the main concern is how our blood is flowing through our body. Specifically, our hearts have evolved to pump blood to our brains under the acceleration that we're currently experiencing. And so if that gets any more or less, but particularly more, then the blood will start pooling in places of your body that are not your brain. And then your body can work harder to some extent to try and keep up. But after a little bit, your brain just doesn't have enough oxygen to survive. You will black out and die. And so the speeds, and specifically the accelerations that you got to worry about 3G is pretty fine. That's like a rocket launch. That's the Gravitron at the fair. You can experience about the same as a rocket launch and what astronauts experience. It's not
That's
pleasant.
Troubling in a way.
You get a little dizzy.
I don't like that.
But you can survive that pretty okay. But once you start getting up to like 9 or 10, that's where you can't last very long. Like maybe a couple seconds to a fraction of a minute, but you can't stay under that very, very long without your blood pooling a dangerous amount.
Like anybody, like even a very highly trained person could not, in with like help,
yep,
couldn't survive that.
Yes.
For
and there
more than seconds.
Are some, like for setting land speed records or air speed records, sometimes there are G suits that help mitigate the effect of acceleration on people's bodies. But I think the fastest recorded acceleration that I could find someone experiencing is on December 10th, 1954, a colonel of the United States Air Force named John Stapp came to a stop and started just as fast on a rocket sled and experienced 46.2 G for a couple seconds. Oh. And he was bruised and badly shaken. And
was he okay, though?
Yeah, he said he felt a sensation in the eyes, somewhat like the extraction of a molar without anesthetic, which is absolutely awful. There are pictures.
Yeah, had that also happened to him?
Well, I don't know, I guess.
The 50s were bad.
I love modern medicine.
I doubt I could survive like 6.
That's like, I think the highest G-force on a roller coaster is around 6. So
yeah,
avoid that
roller
coaster.
I'm sure I could do it for a little while.
Yeah.
But I think that if you did it to me for a couple minutes, I think I'd be done. Yeah. If you want to ask the Science Couch your question, follow us on Twitter at SciShow Tangents. We will tweet out topics for upcoming episodes every week, or you can join the SciShow Tangents Patreon and ask us on our Discord. Thank you to at Erica Muir, at Daniel Brotman on Twitter, and everybody else who asked us questions for this episode. If you like the show and you want to help us out, you could do that in a bunch of different ways. First, you can go to patreon.com/scishowtangents. Become a patron, get access to things like our newsletter and our bonus episodes. And I got to send out a special thanks to our patron, Les Aker. Also, don't forget, once we hit 700 patrons, we're going to do a Minions movie commentary. So go subscribe. Be a part of the... We're almost there. And so you could be the reason we get there. So if you haven't already become a patron at patreon.com/scishowtangents, do that, because we have to see the piss minions. Second, you can leave us a review wherever you listen. That's super helpful, and it helps us know what you like about the show. And finally, if you want to show your love for SciShow Tangents, just tell people about us. Thank you for joining us. I've been Hank Green.
I've been Sari Riley.
And I've been Sam Schultz.
SciShow Tangents is created by all of us and produced by Sam Schultz. Our associate producer is Faith Evelyn Schmidt. Our editor is Seth Glicksman. Our story editor is Alex Billow. Our social media organizer is Julia Buzz Bazzio. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. Our sound design is by Joseph Tuna Medish. Our executive producers are Nicole Sweeney and me, Hank Green. And of course, we couldn't make any of this without our patrons on Patreon. Thank you. And remember, the mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be lighted.
But one more thing. Skippers look like a cross between a butterfly and a moth. They're active during the daytime, but have a fat, fuzzy body. Skipper caterpillars are small and green and make little shelters by rolling themselves up in leaves. That's really cute. And in order to keep their leaf rolls clean and avoid attracting predators, they poke their butts out of one end and fling their poop far away. Specifically, they have an anal plate that covers their butthole that's held shut by an anal comb structure. When their hemolymph pressure builds up enough, the anal comb latch bursts open to shoot a pellet of frass, aka poop, away at a speed of around 1.3 meters per second or more, which is pretty dang fast given their tiny bodies.
Oh, they just adore little poop shooters.
Pew pew.
I love that for them. Get away. That's not going to be good for anybody.
Is that like fast enough to kill a bug if it hits a bug?
It's like a baseball going 50 miles an hour.
Yeah.